What if your personal or business brand was so focused and so on target that it was easy for everyone in your organization to understand? What if you connected with your clients on an emotional level so deeply that they never forgot you? This is what the most successful brands in the world do. It's not about ad budgets. It's about developing a consistent brand, no matter the industry, location, or size of the company. Discover your brand and create an amazing, foolproof marketing strategy. This is the Brand Archetypes Podcast, hosted by Kevin Scarrett and Amy Zander, owners of BrandArchetypes.com. Join them on a journey to discover your most powerful, true brand.
Welcome back to the Brand Archetypes Podcast, everyone. This is Kevin Scarrett, and we have Amy Zander with us today. Hi, Amy.
Hi, Kevin. How are you doing?
Very good. We are going to take a trip to the dark side today. The dark side. The dark side of brand. Well, it's the dark side in that every brand has a dark side. And the listener's going, what? My brand doesn't have a dark side? Well, actually, yeah, it does. Let me give an example. And I think we've brought this one up in the context of us doing our three-second quiz and, you know, asking people to name a running shoe company. Well, if we were to ask 1,000 people to name a running shoe company, the vast majority of them would say Nike. And then if we ask them to give a concept or an idea that pops into their head when they think about Nike, they're going to say things like sports and vigor and healthiness and
just
championships
do it.
And yeah. Do it and winning and all that stuff, right? Well, there's the 90-95% positive side of their brand. But once in a blue moon, once out of every couple of hundred people, someone will say something like, you know, Southeast Asian sweatshops or too expensive or, you know.
Or they align themselves with a spokesperson that ends up not being a super great role model or politically something wrong with them politically or something. Yeah,
exactly right. So those are the dark sides of a brand, and all brands have a dark side, and sometimes the dark side is thrust upon us where or we would like to ignore the dark side because we don't think it's that big of a deal, and then we find out later that it is kind of a big deal. So a lot of what we're going to be talking about today are things, dark sides of brands that they were probably aware of, but they just decided to ignore. But let me give you an example, another example. This was probably 12 or 13 years ago. A business associate of mine in New Hampshire. He was the president of the board of real estate investors for the New Hampshire Real Estate Investors Association, and he had a really very interesting idea of creating a social network for real estate investors to connect property owners and investors so that they could flip properties. And part of the brand development process, you know, I was inquiring as to the nature of the real estate investors, and they're very aggressive and they're very sharp and they're very fast moving and fast thinking. And so we wanted to get something very much in alignment with that, right? And because they do things completely different than realtors, they have kind of this edgy kind of side to them. And so we decided to go with the outlaw archetype.
Yeah, right.
I thought you'd like that.
Right.
The downside that we discovered, the name that we chose was the Black Widow Network, you know, and the tagline was strike fast, because you want to strike fast at getting these deals and closing the deals and flipping the house and making your money. And we thought striking fast and the Black Widow Network would resonate with these very aggressive business owners. What we underestimated and we undermeasured was the negative connotation of black widows and, you know, killing their mates and being poisonous. And right. And it was like, really? It's that bad? And it's like, well, yeah, it ended up being that bad. The venture didn't succeed for other reasons, but wow, did we suffer quite a bit during that process. And it was us just not being aware of the dark side.
Right.
So let's talk about some of the things that are going on in today's political and international environment. We've got a lot of funky stuff going on right now.
True, which is, it's good to bring things to light, right? So as the famous Chinese proverb or curse goes, may you live in interesting times.
And yeah, I like that. We are definitely living in interesting times.
We are for sure. And just to be sure, or just so our audience knows, we are not going to get political or take a particular political stance in this episode. We're talking, you know, purely about brand. And our last episode was like about funny brand mistakes. And this episode's more about like offensive and, like you said, the dark side of brand and trying to make sure that your brand is on top of all things, you know, not being offensive to anybody. So that's what we're talking about here, but we're not going to take any sort of political stance one way or the other on that.
Not that we don't have them. We're
sure.
Just not
well, right. That's not the point, right?
That it's not that point. Yeah. Because these topics tend to do that. They tend to drag people into the political discussion and
right.
And we're going to maintain brand discussion today.
Sure. So, however, though, like you know, in the past few weeks, there's been a lot in the news of, especially after the death of George Floyd and the rise of the Black Lives Matter movement and the protests and things like that going on.
Yes.
You know, a lot of people are reexamining their brands and making sure that they're not offensive and they're up to date and not, you know, holding on to outdated, you know, even like racist views or things like that. So
and we are commenting that is happening, not that we agree with it one way or another, because there are people who think that what is happening is a backlash or it's overreactive or, you know, and we're, you know, again, we're not going to get into the discussion of the issues.
Right.
We're just commenting this is happening right now and it's happening big and it's happening internationally.
For lots of, you know, really good reasons. And I mean, you don't need a huge global reason to reexamine your brand. I mean, you should be doing that regularly anyway, but this has really moved people to do that and it's always good to do that, to re-examine what you're doing. So, yeah.
Right. Yeah. So, So things have exploded a bit in all of our faces and these things are happening and protests are going on. So what is this bit about the dark side? So all brands have a dark side. There are negative connotations. There are negative implications. There are things that there will always be a portion of your target audience who doesn't like you or doesn't like what you stand for, or they don't like your product, they don't like your industry. There's always this dark side of the brand. So our idea should be to maximize the positive side, the light side, and to minimize the dark side, the negative stuff. And really, the more successful you are at that task, maximizing the light and minimizing the dark, then the easier it's going to be. It's not a guarantee, but it's going to be easier for you to build power into your brand over time. So that's kind of what we're talking about today, is to be aware of the things that might happen to you. And, you know, having a discussion about what's happening contextually in the media right now is I think, is kind of interesting, especially considering some of the brands that we're going to talk about today are well over 100 years old.
Right.
Yeah, some really long-standing brands are making a decision to change.
Yeah, and just I'm going to throw this in there before we move on. Taking, you know, politics or current events aside, when we went through each major 12 archetypes, we had an episode on each one. We did have part of the episode we talked about the negative or the risks or the fears, you know, and the SWOT analysis, things about the things to look out for that the personality of your brand can fall into, because everybody and everything has like positive and negative sides to them and personalities. And so there's that too, not just in current events and politics, but just knowing your brand and the personality of your brand, just kind of like your, you know, astrological sign. If you're a Gemini or a Taurus or Leo, there's positive things, negative things, and just knowing that and being aware of the fact that your brand can have a negative side is the first step. It's being aware, right?
Yeah. Who would have ever have guessed that a poisonous spider that kills would have any negative connotations?
I mean, well,
ah,
right. Well,
okay, maybe. Maybe it should be obvious to us.
Well, right? Hindsight, right? Hindsight's 2020. Well, we had locally here, Kevin, in our town in Lansing, we had a coffee shop that started in one location and franchised very quickly and became very popular. And originally the name of the coffee shop was Beaners. And I was...
Which in the Midwest probably slides, but if you pull that off in San Diego... that's not going to go.
Right. And the first one opened when I was in college. So that was like mid-90s. And I never, I mean, it was a coffee shop, beans, coffee beans, beaners, sure. Like it never, I mean, it never dawned on me that that might be offensive. And I'm like, you know, sad to admit that it didn't dawn on me until they had this big rebranding campaign and changed it. But it was interesting because I don't remember there being a huge outcry backlash. Or backlash or people complaining about it. I think they recognized it before it became a bigger problem. And
or it was small enough and frequent enough. We just, they may have been getting daily emails about it.
Right. I mean, and that was also before the huge boom of social media too,
where
things come to light very quickly. But I thought they handled their rebranding really well. And now they're called Big B Coffee and they're everywhere. They're all over the Midwest in several states. And they become really popular. But that was, I felt like they handled their rebrand really well. But that was a case of a company kind of getting out in front of a problem that could have been a lot bigger.
It was a calm rebranding.
Right.
As opposed to our first example today, why don't you tell us about our friend Aunt Jemima, the pancake product company.
Right. Aunt Jemima is owned by Quaker Oats. I think it's a subsidiary of Pepsi. And it's been a brand since like 1889. So over 100 years.
Way back. Yeah.
Right. But I mean, Aunt Jemima was derived from a minstrel song, Old Aunt Jemima by Billy Kersands, a popular black comedian in the late 19th century. But the image of Aunt Jemima is, you know, like a mammy, which is derogatory. I mean, that's not, you know,
absolutely,
it's not something that is makes
especially you, in the late 1880s. You know, we're talking about you know, just post Civil War. You know, Lincoln was shot in 1865, so this is only 24 years after that. You know, so this was tapping directly into the
stereotype,
that imagery,
yeah,
the stereotype of a, you know, the black woman who, you know, cared for your kids, you know, that, and that may have been okay in the 1880s, but you know what's happening now, they're saying, well, okay, maybe that's not okay.
And, yeah, evolving, you know.
Yeah, yep. And PepsiCo made Quaker Oats probably is making a good decision if they want to avoid the negative connotation, the negative impact. And what happens with the negativity of a brand is as it ebbs and flows and waxes and wanes, because things change over time, you get significant chunks of your audience who steer away from you because of it. And when you're talking about large double-digit percentages of people, or people now in the day of social media, where they are outraged by you, you can't tolerate that as a company. Most companies survive on fairly thin margins to begin with, and when you start shaving away double digit percents of your audience, it's just too painful, and it makes sense to make a change, even if it's 100 years old.
Right, so. And you don't want it to come and get, you know, escalate to the point of like a boycott situation, which could happen.
Right.
For sure. And like when it comes to syrup, there's so many choices out there of syrup that, like you said, there's slim margins out there, and you've got to do what you can to be with the times and, you know, appeasing the largest audience and just doing the right thing.
Right.
As far as political things go, you know.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
And there is a huge chunk of, especially in our country, of, you know, we're probably talking 20-30% of our country feels that that our society is too politically correct, that they feel that these kinds of things shouldn't be seen the way they are. But here's the reality, kids. It doesn't matter what a small section of society says. It's what the whole society says.
Majority rules.
Majority rules. In this case,
what you're finding is if you're losing 20% of your population because of a stand that you're taking or because of an imagery you're portraying, then you may be the one losing out. And like you said earlier, Amy, really to the point, you constantly have to be doing the temperature check. Mm-hmm. You have to figure out what's going on with your brand, how you fit in society, you know, the healthiness of your brand. Is it growing? Is it becoming more powerful? Is it stronger? Is it becoming weaker? All that SWOT analysis that we did was intended to walk people through the process of doing that analysis up front when you're deciding on a brand. But for sure, you need to be constantly checking in on that and deciding, do you have new threats? Do you have new opportunities, right?
Right, exactly.
Yeah, our second example, I think, is much more offensive, much, much, much more offensive than the Aunt Jemima imagery. But it's a product that is sold by Colgate-Palmolive, and it's sold in China, and it's called Darlie Toothpaste, D-A-R-L-I-E. It was founded in 1933 by Holly and Hazel. It's a chemical company. It was originally based in Shanghai, later in Hong Kong, and the toothpaste, here's where it starts getting offensive. The toothpaste is known as, and this is in Chinese, the black person's toothpaste. And the original name of it was Darkie, D-A-R-K-I-E. Wow. That's just so, so offensive. Again, this is going back to the early 1900s, 1933. And the original logo that they created was a Caucasian man in a top hat and a bow tie in blackface, reflecting the whole minstrel actors, right?
Right.
So the brand has decided that they're going to completely change their image, and the Chinese state-run media is tagging this as an overreaction, that it's just too politically correct to make a change like that, that the product is fine. Well, you know, we're a little bit more sensitive to these things in the United States as a democracy than what you would expect from the Chinese state-run media.
Sure.
So to see a change like that in the context of everything else that's going on is kind of expected, you know, because that's pretty out there.
Yeah, but it's hard for me to imagine that in this day and age anybody wouldn't see the blackface being offensive. Like, I mean, don't know. It's so, anyway, again, well, we're not going to get political, but it's just hard for me to but it's just like, oh gosh.
They did change the logo. It's less offensive. It's still a male in a top hat and a bow tie. But it's less obvious that it's blackface.
So out of curiosity, though, is this toothpaste being marketed specifically to African-American people, or that's just
no?
No.
No.
Okay.
In fact, the way that in the research that I saw, the reason they call it the black person's toothpaste is that their opinion is that black people, not African-American because this is in China, but black people have very big, bright white teeth, and that just in itself as a stereotype is terrible. But that's what the product is doing.
So
it's
they
portraying
thought,
that
they thought they were seeing something nice about they have really nice white bright teeth, but not understanding the flip side of that. Okay,
correct, gotcha. Correct.
Right. Well, and that's exactly right. Why you've got to look at it from all angles, right?
Yeah. Yeah, so there is another.
Yeah, this isn't a lost in translation situation. This is just an overtly not
insensitive.
Right, insensitive. Yes, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, so our third example is very much akin to the first Aunt Jemima example. Why don't you tell us about Mars?
Yeah, so Mars Company or Mars Incorporated has Uncle Ben's Rice, and this is very similar, like you said, to the Aunt Jemima situation. So the logo portrays the face of a black man, which isn't, you know, by itself, that's not offensive, right?
Right?
But interesting to note that all of these rebranding initiatives are coming out with a clear public relations message, which Mars released saying, as a global brand, we know we have a responsibility to take a stand in helping to put an end to racial bias and injustices. So kudos to them for, again, realizing that they need to be more sensitive and also, you know, using the opportunity of their rebranding to further the message of ending racial bias and the Black Lives Matter movement. Like, I mean, you know, they're taking a brand that needs to be better and using it to further a really good message. So
absolutely. Yeah. And it, to be clear, just because there's an African-American man in the logo on the cover of the box, that's not the imagery. The imagery is Uncle Ben. Again,
it's a stereotype.
It's a stereotype. Right. And he's the person who cared for my kids and that kind of thing.
Right. Very similar to the food. The Aunt Jemima situation. Right.
Absolutely.
Right. Yep. Right. Yeah.
And most recently, and this one's a little bit more nuanced. I didn't realize that it was an issue. But just 4 days ago, the Eskimo Pie Company decided to rename and rebrand. They haven't announced what is going to happen to their brand, but they're not going to use the word Eskimo. And this, again, this is another 100 plus year old brand, and they're tossing the word Eskimo because it has a very negative slur connotation to the Inuit and Yupik natives in Alaska. And apparently that the word Eskimo was taken from their language and it's translated as meat eater.
Okay.
But it's definitely a negative thing to them. It always has been. To us, it just is a word that has been used over time to describe those indigenous natives. But but to them, it's very negative. And, you know, why continue to use something that has a negative, and especially a slur connotation, right?
Right. This is another great example of a brand using a negative part of their brand to educate people, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's great. It's good stuff happening with this.
Yeah. Now, here we are talking on a podcast, you know, two local, Midwestern agency owners talking about these large, long-standing brands. I don't know how you feel about it, but this is free advertising in my mind to them.
Right.
This is it. They're not doing it for that reason, but the awareness and the discussion, this could be as big to them as any campaign that they ever create. That by taking a positive stance and making a shift, they can actually draw awareness of their brand
new customers. And absolutely. And like we're seeing, like the you know, I mean, we don't have the exact stats or whatever, but the 10 or 20% or whatever that feel like, oh, you're too sensitive about this or blowing out of proportion and don't need to change it. You might lose those people, but you're going to gain, potentially, you have the potential to gain so many more clients, right, which is something like, so
or not again, lose.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And so so that's another reason why it's important to re-examine your brand and not worry so much about the small percentages you might lose compared to who you might gain. So so it's always important to do that. So
we've been talking about consumer products, but this is not, you know, isolated to this area. We also see a lot of fervor with the whole Black Lives Matter movement in the naming of sports teams, you know, especially the Washington Redskins, they've been a target for a long time, decades now, where people want them to change their name, but they just, for whatever reason, refuse. And I think they just had a shift in their ownership. If I'm not mistaken, I'm sure our listeners can tap in and comment, let us know. Can do a little Google research, but Washington Redskins have always been kind of a target on their back because of their name.
Right.
So where the Washington Redskins football franchise has decided not to change their name, the Nestle company, they have a product, a candy product called Redskins, that they did decide to change the name. You know, even though it's Redskins, not Redskins, and it's not the same reference, they still just didn't want the negativity, so they decided to make the change.
Interesting. Yeah.
So, yeah, what other teams come to mind in your...
Let's see. The Cleveland Indians removed the Chief Wahoo mascot from their logo in 2018. So, yeah, they changed their mascot. Yeah,
I think there's a pretty well-handled professional sports. There's not too many examples left of those, but... There are definitely tons of university examples of that have changed over time. And one that comes to mind, this was my ex-wife was a Cal grad, and their arch nemesis was Stanford University. In 1972, I was not aware of this, their mascot, they were called the Indians. Okay. And they changed their name to the Cardinal, you know, in reference to, I think it's about the tree and the bird, but they have a tree as a mascot. Now, I could go off all day long on my issue with the tree as a mascot and the tree dancing around on the field.
Right.
And it's like, huh, yeah. I'm not getting it. I'm just not getting it. But it's longstanding now. You know, we're talking.
It's still better than the Indians.
That is absolutely right. Right. Yeah.
Right.
And we have an article that we can drop this into the show notes, where it lists more than 40 examples of colleges over the course of the last 50 years who have changed their mascot, changed their name, changed their taglines, just because of these social issues.
Right. And most of them becoming more aware, evolving, yeah, educated.
Yeah, either derogatory or. Right. Inflammatory, yep.
Yeah.
And even my own high school. I grew up in Milford, Michigan, and the high school in Milford for years and years and years they were called the Redskins. All the way through the mid-80s. I graduated in 1979, but just a handful of years later, they changed the name of the mascot from the Redskins to the Mavericks. You know, so it's not what I grew up with, but I totally get the change. And I even have a Milford Mavericks shirt.
Right. My husband went to Marshall, Michigan, a much smaller town than I grew up in. And they were, I can't remember exactly what it, but they changed their name. It was something to do with Indians or Native Americans. And now they're like the Readers or the Scholars or something that's like so not, you know, hero-esque, I guess. You know, it doesn't like... For sports teams and stuff, it's not super energetic. And he always thought that they could have picked something different than that. But at least it's not the old offensive name either.
Right.
Yeah.
And if you do feel the need to come up with a new name, be very careful about crowdsourcing it and asking the general public to come up with your name. We talked about Bodie McBoatface an episode or two ago, right? Ann Arbor Huron High School in Ann Arbor, Michigan, did the same thing, and they put the mascot up to the public. Do you know what the Ann Arbor Huron's mascot is?
No.
The River Rats.
Oh, the River Rats.
Now they're very proud of it. The Ann Arbor Huron River Rats. Wow. But,
There's a high school there. Oh man, there's a high school in Battle Creek, and we passed it on the way to going to the Binder Park Zoo, and it's a high school, and they're the Beavers. I'm just gonna leave that right.
Leave
there.
That right. just let that set.
Right.
Nothing need be said anymore. Okay, yeah. So just to summarize, we are going to accentuate the positive, downplay the negative, and. Really, I think even a more important message here for this episode is to stay in touch with what is happening around you, with what's happening politically. How your brand fits into the world is just as much important as what you originally created. That things change over time, and you constantly have to be sensitive to your position in the world and how people view you, how they see you, how they're reacting to you. And if you stay on top of it and are willing to make shifts as needed, then you're good. You can avoid some of the chaos that these brands are suffering through, right?
Right. And I mean, it is scary sometimes to think about making a shift like that. But as we talked about in this episode and we talked about before, it can actually be really good for your brand in the long run. I mean, there might be a little bit of growing pains, but done right and done well and for all the right reasons, it can actually help your brand.
Yeah,
and so if you're questioning that or struggling with something about your brand or one of your products or things that you want to update and you'd like some advice or like some people to talk it over with, we are willing and welcoming you to call us and contact us and we can have that conversation. I could talk about brand all day. I don't know about you, Kevin, but
oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So Yeah,
you be can. Sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, LinkedIn. Yep. Connect with us, and you can continue the conversations there as well. And thanks, Amy.
All right, thank you, Kevin.
That was a good one. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, sounds good. Bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Brand Archetypes Podcast. Are you ready to discover your company's archetype? Check out brandarchetypes.com, where you can download the book, find out about archetype-specific strategies, connect with us on social media, and sign up for our newsletter.